And don't let them be too hard on you, because it's not really that bad. So I'm going to introduce Father Barney to the rest of you.
Thanks, Vic. You kind of make me out to be a bad man. My homecoming, because I look upon this as a kind of a homecoming. I haven't been here for so long, and I see so many friendly faces out there. Go back over 20 years. My sponsor, who's long gone, was probably the one who set the pattern for me individually. Loyola was not my first group. It was my second group. My first group was the Gleason Street Industrial Group. And that was just 20 years ago. And I understand they're opening up their new place, this coming Saturday. I went down there for the simple reason that, I would be less apt to be detected by any of my retreatants who happened to be, have been making retreats under me at Loyola Retreat House. That was the only reason. That was the first reason that was given to me by my sponsor. And the second reason was, he says, I want you to see where you're going to end up if you continue to drink. Well, I walked into that place, and I tell you, it was gut AA. There were guys in there that had holes in their shoes that were illiterate. But I never felt so much at home in my life with any group of people than with that group of people down there. They were my people. I understood them. For the first time in my life, I felt understood. After I left the Gleason Street group, we went out to Loyola. At 20 years ago, for a priest to be an AA was quite a thing. to be an alcoholic was quite a thing for a priest to be an alcoholic. In fact, for anybody to be an alcoholic was quite a thing in those days. You're a moral derelict. You didn't have a progressive disease. You're a moral derelict. You're like a leper. Boy, you coming in today, these guys say it's so tough to come in. I said, you should have seen it 20 years ago. Was it anonymous? It was underground. I was an anonymous alcoholic. And I did it for self-protection. I didn't want to get sent to the boondocks, which I thought I was going to until I ran into the good archbishop, and he gave me his blessing and told me to go on my way. And that's 20 years ago, and he predicted that time I'd have a great apostolate amongst the alcoholics. And the man's still alive, 94 years old, 95. And I'm still alive. I don't know why, but I'm still alive, and I'm doing just exactly what he predicted I'd do. I'm out giving retreats all over the country to alcoholics. This is my apostolate. This is my work. This is my thing. Speaking of that industrial group, they had a card out. I don't know whether they still have it, but they had the card in which this prayer, which I've given out, the serenity prayer, the complete serenity prayer, was printed on the back. And I thought it might be appropriate to kind of tonight to go over it. You know that 11th step? This is the thing that I concentrate on most because that actually is what a retreat's all about. It's a time, it says there in the 12x12, which I recommend that you read, which came out the same year I came in this program, and which if you didn't have a copy in those days and a copy of the big book, you weren't even a licensed member of this fellowship. You had to have both, and you should have read both of them. But I've run into guys today, been on this program 12, 15 years, and never heard of the 12x12. And after I talk to them for a few minutes to find out why, I get some of their interpretations, the various interpretations of the 12 steps. They're coming off the top of their heads, and their heads are on crooked. You know, they used to say about the guy that used to try to always rewrite the big book, well, these guys don't even try to write. They just talk from off the top of their head. So the 12 by 12 is the official interpretation of the 12 steps. The 12 steps is the program of AA. You can be in AA, but not necessarily on the program. You're on the program if you're working the 12 steps. Now, how are you going to work something you don't know, that you don't understand? Well, if you read the 12 by 12, you'll find out what it means. And that's exactly what I do during retreats. And as I say, I concentrate on the 11th step, which where we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. One of the finest commentaries I've ever read on prayer is in the 12 by 12 on the 11th step. I don't think I've ever read a better book on prayer than you can find in there. It mentions in there that in prayer, first of all, prayer is the lifting of the heart and the mind to God. And it describes the need for prayer. It says that just as the flowers and the animals and animal life need the sunlight, need the air, the oxygen and the rest of it for human life, in the spiritual life you need prayer just as much for the spiritual growth. And it says this is a spiritual program. That's why we must pray. I have found out that the ones that pray are the ones who need to pray. The needers. They talked about Josh here, Big Josh. I remember Josh used to have a saying, the guy that said, I got to hang up on prayer. I can't pray. Josh used to say, just keep drinking and you'll pray. I don't recommend that. But that's what Josh said. He said, you just keep praying, you keep drinking, and you'll pray. It says there in the 12 by 12, you know, there's various guys that got hang-ups on prayer. Well, an Elkie's got a hang-up on everything. Prayer is the only thing he's got a hang-up. He's got physical hang-up, mental, emotional, moral, you name it. He's hung up for good. And unfortunately, half the time, he doesn't even know it. Everybody else does but him. I had a guy come up one time, and I was giving a talk in 11th step, and he says, I hardly disagree with many things you said. And I said, that's your privilege. Well, he wanted to fight. Says there in that traditions, you're not supposed to fight. Particularly if the guy's bigger than you are. And then he stuck his chin out right in front of me. He says, I'm an atheist. And I says, well, I happen to be a Catholic priest. Says, what's the quarrel? I said, I wasn't talking theology tonight. I was talking sobriety. I said, what do you want to be, a drunken atheist or a sober atheist? Before I got through, I'd heard his general confession. Those are some of the worst. Well, anyway, it mentions in there the various types of prayer, and it talks about mental prayer. Meditare means to think about. Now, some Elkies say, you mean that I have to meditate? I said, geez, you're a genius at meditating. And there's nobody I know that's a better meditator than an Elkie. I said, what were you doing? You're drinking. You were meditating, thinking about booze, where you were going to get it, where you hit it, what you're going to tell your wife, your boss. I said, geez, you were meditating all the time. That was your obsession. But it wasn't on the spiritual. It was on the spirits. Now we make a little switch. We take the jug away from you, and we give you a book of prayer. Now, it's mentioned there in the 12 by 12 that one of the forms of prayer is take a prayer like St. Francis, prayer of St. Francis, which I happen to be using now as my retreat back framework for my retreat. The Lord's Prayer, the Serenity Prayer, and take each word and prayerfully meditate on the meaning of it and apply it to yourself. Make it practical. How does this fit me? You see, that's prayer. You talk it over with God about yourself. That's prayer. It's conversation with God. talking it over with God. And you understand him in your own words. Now, we got a beautiful prayer here, this serenity prayer. I don't know how many times a day I say this. This serenity to me is the greatest. I never worry about my sobriety. I worry about my serenity. Because if I got good serenity, I will not lose my sobriety. To me, serenity is the test of the quality of your sobriety. Now, it says God. God, as I understand him. For me, he's an infinitely perfect person. He's more than a power. He's more than a hydrogen bomb. I can't get very chummy with a hydrogen bomb. And yet, there are alkies that look upon God with as much fear as they do a hydrogen bomb. I had a guy come one time and say, he said, "Gee, Father, I can't pray. I'm too scared of God." And I said, "Tell me something about your God. Describe him to me." So he started in. He got about 2 minutes into it, and I said, "Stop. Let's get out of here. I'm scared too." God, I said, "If that's God, you're a brave man. He didn't use his word, his name." But that was God as he misunderstood him, see? There were a lot of us were in that position. I didn't feel like praying when I came in. I was so mixed up. I used to pray to pray. I didn't want to pray. I was so fouled up, so discouraged. I'd help so many other alcoholics by sending them to AA to get rid of them. I sent more guys to AA before I ever got on AA than all the AAs in town. But I did it to get rid of them. They used to annoy me, these damn alkies. Particularly if they were obnoxious or sloppy. I couldn't stand a guy that couldn't hold his boot. They brought a disgrace upon the brotherhood. If you couldn't hold it, don't drink it. And I still to this day have an awful time tolerating a sloppy drunk. I got to say, "Oh, God, help me. Pray for me. Help me. Help me. Help me. Help me. Keep my mouth shut." You see? Well, anyway, we turn to God as we understand him, power greater than ourselves. He says there, we tried every other thing under God. This is our problem. We always make God our last resort. If everything else fails, then we'll try God. Maybe he can do something about it. We try God. When it should be just the opposite. He should be our first resort. He should be the first one we turn to. "God grant me, petition, ask, and you shall receive." You know, we're needers. We've got to ask. We got to ask on a daily basis. It says there that our sobriety is contingent on daily contingent on our spiritual condition. We got a daily reprieve contingent upon our spiritual condition. As long as my spiritual condition is okay, my sobriety is okay. It says so in the big book. "Grant me the serenity." I don't like the word serenity. It sounds too much like tranquility. And if there's anything that will kill an alky faster, it's tranquility. Because that's the stuff you were drinking for all those years. The greatest of the tranquilizers. Oh, it had a fooler in it. Cunning, baffling, powerful. The initial effect was to stimulate you. But then it started to work. And you thought it was wearing off. You see, this is how sharp we are. I used to teach organic chemistry. I taught the stuff. Pre-med. I've got doctors that I taught pre-med to. Organic chemistry. And yet I didn't know that. I knew all the formulas. But I used to think it was wearing off, so I'd take another one. So you go up another half floor. Then pretty soon it starts working again. You think it's wearing off, so you take another one. Pretty soon it's work. And you're out of work. You're asleep. You're passed out. You see, this stuff is tranquilized. You're right out of your shoes. And here we do, trying it every time. Never learning. This time's going to be different. Serenity, unlike tranquility. See, there's conflict in life. First of all, the first thing we got to remember is that this life is a warfare. I don't care how you look at it. We are not living in a utopia. You see, when we were drinking, we tried to get rid of these conflicts with booze. Because booze pulled the curtain on them. It didn't settle anything. It's like they're doing now meet to meet. They don't stop the war, but they have a meeting, and during the meeting, they stop the war for the time of the meeting. As soon as the meeting's over, they start shooting again. Well, we're pretty much the same way. Things are going haywire, so what do? We drink to forget. When we came off of it, they were 3 days older, and the thing was 3 days worse. We didn't solve anything. We went from problems to trouble. Problems to trouble. You see, any time I try to solve a problem with booze, I'll always end up with trouble. I remember an old saying they used to tell me when I first came in, there's nothing that a drink won't make worse. So don't take the first one. You see, it isn't the 55th drink that gets you. It's the first one. If that is the thing that we can only keep in our heads, it's the first one that does the work. It's like a guy going up a glacier, and he slips. He goes over the precipice, he falls 10,000 feet. Well, that's just incidental, that he falls 10,000 feet. He may be smashed up a little more than if he'd fallen only 10 feet. But the mistake he made is when he slipped. When his foot slipped the first time, he was through. He was gone. They say, does an alcoholic have any free will? Yeah, you dang right he has. If he wants to use it. He wants to use it and not take that first drink, but after he gets a few belts in him, he's got no will. He's got nothing. He's got no brains either. He's had it. Serenity presupposes conflict. It thrives on conflict. That's why I always like to see a Nalky that's making this program always being pushed around a little, in a little trouble. Not trouble, but problems. I like to see him being pushed. I hate when a guy comes up and says, oh, geez, everything's going wonderful, Father. God, he's going to that guy. I say a prayer for him. Oh, God. That's just when a guy is in trouble. See, he's letting his guard down. Everything's going good. He's going good. And then, bingo, the next thing you hear, the guy's drunk. Going so good. You know, we can drink either when we're down or when we're up. I remember one guy used to get drunk every time he got a car and was feeling good. He got a car and he got drunk. And so I asked him, I said, why is it when your things are so bad, you're fine, but as soon as things go good, you get drunk? And he said, I want them to be better. I said, you're an alky. If they're bad, you're going to drink. If they're good, you're going to drink. If they're just the same, you get bored and drink anyway. So we can get a reason to drink, excuse to drink at any drop of head. You know, the first serenity prayer was written in the 16th century in the old English. I had a copy of it that I gave out to somebody who was going to give it back. You know how that is. But it was called the soldier's prayer. It was a prayer that the soldiers said when they went to battle to keep their cool. I call serenity poise in the midst of conflict. Or as I tell the kids, cool in the midst of conflict. I'm quite a sports fan. I like to make parallels between sports. I like to think of that pitcher that's out there on the mound. The last game of the World Series. Two outs, bases loaded. Last of the night, his team's ahead by one run. And here's our best batter up. And he's got to get that ball past that on the plate, pass that batter. And they all come rushing into him. The manager comes out and says, you can do it. You can throw it. Third baseman comes, second baseman. The catcher comes out and says, put it in here. The guy says, here, well, you take it. I'll trade it. You catch this time. It was so easy, you pitch it. So easy, why don't you guys do it? Now, the real pro, he keeps his cool in the midst of the most terrible pressure tension that you can possibly imagine. And he gets that ball down over that plate and up past that batter, and he wins the World Series. He stays sober. You see, that's what it takes to make this program. It's a non-professional organization that makes pros. There's no room for amateurs in this AA program. The amateurs don't survive because there is no margin for error. Booze doesn't say this poor guy's stupid, so I'll take it easy on him. He made an honest mistake. He'll knock your head off just as much as if you take it maliciously. Booze doesn't care. Booze is patient, cunning. Boy, he'll wait for you to make the... See, booze is like a good professional team that forces you into mistakes. And as soon as you drop that sobriety, bang, they got the ball.
You lose recovery of your sobriety. Who's got it? John Barleycorn recovery. And there goes another ball game. They lose the all-pro game.
You see? So we have to learn how to be able to handle ourselves in all contingencies. I remember talking about the Loyola group. I still think that the original industrial group, Gleason group, and the Loyola group, I won't say they're the two best groups I've ever been connected with or in and throughout my going all over the United States, but I have never seen two groups that are any better. I'll put it that way. That's what I think of. And I think the reason is just what Ralph says. They tell it the way it is, and that there's only one way you could tell it. Truth is one. And you've got to be told. An alky's got, they say, don't tell an alky. Baloney. You don't tell him, he'll die. I thank God they told me what to do for the first year. I remember my sponsor told me, he said, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything and call me. That was his vote of confidence in me. And that's why I made it. When I didn't know what to do, I was on the phone and I was calling him and he was telling me what to do. And I made it. And that was the only way I could have made it. And boy, when he told me to do something, I did it. I put my confidence completely in him, God in him, and I made it. It's the only way I would have made it. Because up to that time, I was doing all the talking. I was giving all the advice. I was a great counselor. That used to use these clarets, these green clarets. That was the only mistake I made. No one ever knew I drank, because I used to keep them away from me. I had a big chair. They couldn't smell me. I had to call. I practiced ecology way back then. I knew what the smell of, what do they call that, the smell incident, yeah. I knew how far they could be, I could get to them, and I had it all figured out. God, I did more work than the CIA. I never moved from one chair to another. If I was being observed, if I figured I was going to be staggering, I would always wait till I turned. I was always that. And if I thought my speech was a little slurred, I'd be a great listener. The only mistake I made, I used those lousy green clarets. And my tongue was constantly green. Somebody's talking about St. Patrick today. Well, I look like St. Patrick all the time. Now, what is the basis of this being able to accept this serenity? It's acceptance. I gotta accept things as they are. Give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Now, there's some things I can't change now, but maybe I can change in time. There are some things I can never change, and one of them is my alcoholism. That I can never change. There is no cure. There is only recovery. And that on a day-by-day basis. So I must accept that. There's two ways I can accept the thing, either through compliance or surrender. Compliance is I do it not because I want to, but because I have to. I didn't go into AA because I wanted to. I went in because I knew if I didn't, I would lose my mind because I was already having in the audio DTs, hearing music. And I hated music. And hearing voices of people, and there were no people in the room. That's a frightening thing. That's when I began to negotiate. I figured I want to keep my marbles. You see? In other words, that's going to be the same thing. If I were to ever resume drinking, God forbid, I wouldn't fear death. I've come near death 3 times with my heart. I'd fear insanity. That's what I fear more than anything. And I know one thing, I can just see it still. It's kind of like a film, a thin film on my brain that if I ever drank again, it would dissolve and that would be the end of me. I know that just as sure, and I feel it just as sure as the last drink I ever took. And I pray, God, I never lose that fear. That keeps me honest. Acceptance. I can either do it because I have to or because I want to. Now, I think most of us come in the first way. We come in because we have to. After we hang around a while, we find out this is the life. This is not only just staying off of the bottle, but this is a whole new way of life, a new ball game. And we like it. It's not so much that we fear the loss of our sobriety as we fear this life, the loss of this life that we have, this beautiful life, this fellowship that we have. God, I look back over the years since I've been in this program. Do you know I can count on my hand, with one hand, the number of non-alcoholics that I associate with. Not because I've cut them off. I don't have time anymore. The alkies take up all my time. And I really enjoy it. I'm more at home with the alkies. I get one of these non-alcoholics, and he tries to have me explain what alcoholism is. You ever try that? Boy, that's when I say the serenity prayer. The courage to change the things I can. Courage. My sponsor told me that it took 2 things to make this program. The grace of God and guts. If you got those 2, you'll make it. If you don't have those 2, you don't make it. Without breaking any secrets, I know of one particular fellow that very good dear friend of mine that I got on this program by challenging his guts. He was so mad at me, he came on and made it to show me that he could, to disprove the fact that I figured he couldn't make it, and he's still here. Challenging your guts. And I've told many an alkie, that's what it hinges on, 2 things, grace and guts. If you've got the grace and guts, you'll make it. If you don't, try it next year. You get your release, try it out, try it again next year. You're not going to make it. Booze isn't the only thing you have to give up when you get on this program either, boy. There are a lot of other things you got to go. You know, there are a lot of various kinds of bottles. And some of them aren't good for any hokey. You have to give those bottles up, too. We got to find out what those are. That's why we have the inventory steps. Steps 6 and 7. We got to go in there and find out. You know, they say drinking isn't the cause. It's the effect of something deeper. And boy, the longer you're on this program, the deeper you get and the more you see of the things that can trigger your drinking if you ever let them get out of control. Talked about in that big book about those 7 cardinal character defects. Pride, avarice, lust, anger, gluttony, sloth. And it says, boy, they're in there. You can control them, but you can't eradicate them. And just when you think you've got humility down pat, that's when you have reached your highest point of pride. I go around bragging how humble I am. Got that lick. I sure got that brag lick. What is courage? Well, there's various kinds of courage. You know, there's physical courage. Some guys don't have physical courage. In other words, they can't take physical punishment. Some people have a high tolerance of pain. I think most alkies do. God, we go through the Lord, we suffer. Physically. It's unbelievable that we'd ever go back and try it again. I had a wife ask me once. I said, how can that man... She didn't call him her husband either. Can that man go back after he's gone through so many terrible things? I said, that's simple. He's able to take the first drink. He gets that down the old hatch and he's got a mage. This time it'll be different, boy. I'll control everything. I got everything under control this time. I know the secret of it now. Change the brand. How many times did he change the brand? I got tired of that, so I took the cheapest. After the first drink, it made any difference what you're drinking. I never liked the taste of it anyway, so I have to take the cheaper stuff. It goes longer that way. It lasts longer. Courage is a moral virtue not to back down in the face of doing good. That's one definition. Not to quit in the face of adversity. But there's another kind of courage whereby you have the courage to quit something. Quit something that's bad. And that's the kind of courage we need. You see, when we get challenged and they say we're an alcoholic, we can't drink, we go on this other thing, we'll prove it. Disprove it. It's only when we come to the day and we say they were right and I was wrong. I quit. I throw in the towel. John Barleycorn, you're the champ. You can wear that crown for the rest of your life. I don't want to ever challenge you again. I'm through this business. I've been knocked out for the last time. I want to keep what marbles I got left. That's courage. That takes courage. Particularly when everybody around goes and says, didn't I tell you? Didn't I tell you? That was my hardest thing, was to have to admit to myself and everybody else who knew me that they were right and I was wrong. What did I have to do it to save my life? The courage to change the things I can. I think this is the biggest thing we get out of this program is change. This idea of physical compulsion after you're on this program any length of time, I don't study. That part doesn't bother me. Or the obsession. Just maybe because I work with so many guys and I see so many guys going down the tube, God, it just scares me to death. When I see booze to me, it's poison. I'm like the guy who could never quit drinking until he could see in every bottle of booze the word poison. From that day on, he never took another drink. He said, I may be a jackass, but I'm not jackass enough to drink poison. He never took another drink. He went to AA. That's the way I look on booze. I don't care whether it's beer or bourbon. Or rot gut wine. If it's got ethyl alcohol in it, look out. It'll keep you. It'll kill you. You know, I don't know why it is. So many of my dear friends and they are dying of cancer. God, I've lost a lot of my friends in cancer. And when you mention cancer, everybody shivers. Terminal cancer. God. You tell a guy that, you know, he's got cancer, he'll go to Mayo's, he'll go anywhere, do anything. Go to any lake. And beyond that. But you know, I've seen guys get over cancer. So-called terminal cancer. But I've never yet seen an alcoholic who continued to drink, whoever survived, whoever lived. To me, it's the most terminal of all the diseases. And it's the most comprehensive. It doesn't just affect your mind. It affects every single part of it. The body, spirit, everything is affected. And to think that there are so few of us that are actually trying to do something about our problem. That the hills are just filled with suffering alcoholics who are drinking themselves to death. This is the frustrating thing about it, is when you see so few among so many. God, in California, where I do most of my work, well, I heard the other day that there are more alcoholics in the city of San Francisco than all the dope heads in the United States. That's just one city. God, you meet them at every corner. They're all over. That's all you hear about is dope today, you know, the funding. Only it's just money for dope. You talk to kids. I talked to a bunch of them not long ago, a bunch of addicts, recovered addicts. They'll still tell you it's beer and wine. And you know that a lot of these addicts are dying of alcoholism, the majority of them, 98% of them. They can't support their dope habits, so what do they turn to? Wine. To keep from withdrawal. And they turn into alcoholics and they die of cirrhosis of the liver. Only 2% of those that die of cirrhosis of the liver die of hepatitis because of a bad needle. The rest of them die as alcoholics. So, we got quite a gathering. We got a lot more than we ever banked on. Besides, this straight alkies, we got all the addicts. See, when I heard that, I said, boy, we're really behind the eight ball. Change the things I can. I can change myself with God's grace, slowly. But it'll come back. You have to watch. One of my problems is anger. God, I got a terrific temper. I may not show it. But you ask my brothers and sisters how close to death they came on several occasions when I was after them, when I was mad, when I was a kid. I'd have killed them if I got hold of them. I know it. That'd be a little faster than I was, and bigger. But with the grace of God and, you know, in athletics, you get to do that in athletics, some guy knock your can off. You kind of learn to control your temper. And I still have that temper, but I got a new way to use it. Transference, they call it. I use it in my talk. I get rid of it on you people. All these frustrations and everything that build up within me, that's why I talk the way I do. I'm not talking against you. I'm talking against the thing that's going to kill you if you don't stop drinking. That's the guy I hound, I follow all over this country, John Barleycorn. You see, he beat me in booze, and I'm trying to beat him in sobriety. And I'm every place I get a chance to face him, to expose him, I do. So wisdom's to know the difference. Wisdom. I think wisdom is a product of two things, prayer and experience. I've met some of the most wise people, wisdom-filled people in any place I've met that I've been. I've known people in AA that could neither read nor write. But boy, did I ever respect their wisdom. I heard a fellow one night down in Gleason get up and give a talk, and he prefaced his talk by saying that when he came into AA, he had to look up the definition of God in the dictionary. And then he proceeded to give one of the most beautiful spiritual talks I ever heard. It was right from the heart. And I thought, boy, this must be some program when you can start that far down the ladder and come up with something like that. And that's why I hope we never get a generation gap in AA. Gotta hope that never comes. The young need the old need the young. We need one another. And sometimes that we see this happen. Sometimes the old timer, he figures maybe that he's not appreciated, or he's pushed back, or he's not. We need the wisdom of the man. Whenever I get an old timer, I like to pick his brains. I learn more from those people than I do out of a book. Because they've been there, they've seen it, they've experienced it. And yet I like to get the thoughts of a new man. Because it's been so long since I was a new man that I can forget what it was like. And I've got to keep aware at all times of all types of people. The beginner, the middle, and the end. So I've got to be able to deal and to communicate with all, every type. They need me, I need them. Living one day at a time, this good AA. Living in the present with the past and with the future. Keep the past like they say, when you're driving the car, you watch that mirror up there. You're looking to the, you're looking back. Occasionally see what's back there to protect yourself. But you're looking through the mirror. You're looking up what's ahead. And you're driving right now. You're not driving 2-3 blocks ahead. You're driving now because you're liable to miss 2 red lights if you start driving too far in advance. So you drive right now, this present moment. Enjoying one moment at a time, one heartbeat. Sobriety should be joyful. It should be a joyful sobriety. That doesn't mean you have to go around laughing or clowning around, but it should be inside you should be happy with. You should be happy. I hate to see an unhappy alcoholic, because to me, that is what I call the dry drunk.
And brother, if you get on a dry drunk, it doesn't take very long before you wet it down.
And the number one thing that I know of that will get you on a dry drunk is resentment. The number one enemy of the alky is resentment of persons, places, or things. God, we can resent anything. That's our problem. The only way I know of handling a personal resentment is when that face comes into my imagination or memory. I say a prayer for him. Some guy said the other day, you mean to say a prayer for that SOB? I say, yeah, say a prayer for that SOB. And you pray long enough, and someday you won't be calling on an SOB. You may see something good in him. In the meantime, you're going to save yourself a resentment. You'll save yourself, and maybe you'll help him. Because if I keep resenting long enough, I'll start feeling sorry for me. Poor me. And as they say, if you cry in your beer long enough, you'll drink it. Self-pity is the most destructive thing on this earth. It always ends up in some form of suicide. Physical, mental, emotional, moral. Suicide. It will eventually destroy you. Taken as he did, this sinful world is, not as I would have it. We are not saints. Amen. God, if any guy ever comes in and says, I am a saint, I say either that guy's drunk or he's got his head for one. I've always said a saint is a sinner who keeps trying. We can do that. Sinner who keeps trying. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't be trying in that direction, too. Knowing and doing God's will is being a saint. Not having visions. I had a guy come up to me one day and they want to know about it. I had a spiritual experience. I said, I think you've had delayed DT. Because this guy wasn't particularly careful about what God's will was for him or what he's doing about it. But anyway, he thought he had an experience. He did.
When I tolerate something, there's always the element of evil in it. I don't tolerate the good. I approve the good. Physical evil. Sickness. I don't approve that, but I have to tolerate it if I'm going to be any kind of a nurse. If I'm going to go out on a 12-step call on a messy mess, some people can't, their stomach can't take that kind of a 12-step call. They like the clean type. Well, if you can't tolerate that stuff, how are you going to help the poor drunk? You don't approve of it, but you tolerate it. Ignorance. You tell a guy, and he keeps having to repeat. Tolerance. Patience. Maybe you were that way. You had to keep being told. You had to learn. Fall down in your face. Learn the hard way. So you have to be tolerant with this man's ignorance so that you can get some sobriety into his head, some knowledge. So this is what we have to do. We have to be compassionate, like I mentioned the other night. Be compassionate, but never permissive. That's a tough thing to do. Because an Elkie, I'm talking about an active Elkie, is a genius at getting hold of a compassionate person like he thought I was. Perfect example. I was compassionate, he thought, and he was going to, you know, get me to become permissive. I was. I gave him permission to go to the Loyola group. Not a permission, I gave him a command. You see, but I was compassionate. I did feel sorry for you, all those needles, and you're sitting in that nice, beautiful outdoor room. God, I thought, what a thing. I didn't tell you half of what I was going to tell you. Trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will. Trusting. Gee, there's so much trust we have to have in this thing. They say faith is about things unknown. I have to take it on the authority of another. Now, there's a lot of things I don't see or don't understand, but if I take it on the authority of another person, my sponsor, for instance, he tells me it'll be all right. I look back at my sponsor. There were so many things that used to bug me, and I'd ask him about it. He said, you just wait until it comes. The time comes, and the grace will be there. You see, Elkies are guys that we're like when we go out on a trip, we want to have all our, you know, all our tickets and all our reservations and everything all tucked in here and everything accounted for, you know. And so there's one little loophole of 10 minutes where we might be stuck between, we're all upset. So we're going to have everything set for the rest of our lives. God. No wonder the guy has to bring a jug with him. Trusting that he'll make all things right if we surrender to his will. We say, dear God, I'm stupid. I have proven it. You're infinitely wise. Just take care of me. Keep me from making too many mistakes today. That's my prayer. Keep me from making too many stupid mistakes. And he does usually. He pulls me out of some of the dangest things I get into. I see afterwards, I say, my God, it had to be God, or it was, this thing would have gone up in smoke. That I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever in the next. This is what we have an awful hard time settling for, reasonable happiness. I've never found it yet. Reasonable happiness. God, it's got to be real happy. It has to be the best, the greatest. Maybe you Al-Anons won't agree with this, but someone has said that, that the Elkie's a little more attuned to the supernatural, the eternal. They also say we have a higher IQ. I don't know if anybody has ever said that except an Elkie, but anyway. So I won't contest the thing. Now I'm going to end up on one little note. I hope that I've helped you with this little prayer, and that you use it, take it, use it. I don't remember all of it. I know the first part. I say it 1,000 times a day. When I want to keep my cool, and I'm ready to lose it,
I said, God grant me the serenity. I start praying. And by the time I get through halfway through it, I forget what I was getting mad about. For nothing else, it's a tremendous distraction. Prayerful distraction. All I know is this. In my experience with my own self and work with other alcoholics, that we have one of two choices. Either the spiritual or the spirit. We've got to get spiritual some way. And there's only one way we can do that, and that's through the help of God. We can't do it on our own. Any more than we can handle the spirits on our own. It took God to get us off of the spirit. It takes God to get us on the spirit. But he will get past. And so I want to thank you for asking me to come here to talk and to renew old acquaintance of Jesus. It looks beautiful to see some of you fellows I haven't seen for years. And so you say, my, you're looking better each year. I must have looked like heck about 5 or 6 years ago. Because every year I'm looking better. So I don't know, I still must be looking bad, but I'm looking better than I was a year ago. I guess that's what they mean. Is that right, Frank? Well, God bless you.